We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of 4 lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.
Baseball is back, basketball is heating up, and the NFL draft is right around the corner. Listen to the latest on the teams you love here on the Odyssey app, the biggest sports radio stations in the country, providing unrivaled local coverage of their teams, all in one place. Exclusive interviews with players, coaches, and team executives, streaming live and always available on demand. Stay in the know with your favorite teams right here on the Odyssey app.
And welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show as we're sitting in for Mark Reardon and John. So much focus on the national presidential elections. A lot of people may be seeing the yard signs starting to pop up across the state. We've got local elections, we've got federal elections, and even a race for governor that's starting to heat up.
Yeah, there's a new poll out today, and it's St. Louis University and YouGov, and they've done a poll, statewide poll in Missouri, 900 people surveyed, and they show the president of the United States, Donald Trump, with a 7-point lead over Joe Biden in Missouri. That's sort of consistent with some other polling that we've seen. But they show Mike Parson with just a 2.2 percentage point lead over his challenger, Democratic State Auditor Nicole Galloway. Any surprises to you in these results?
Well, look, this is a state that went with nearly 20 points for President Trump. And to see the president back down, I've seen polls as low as the president only being 4 up in Missouri. And then you have Governor Parson, who's been the face of the Missouri corona response, also very close with President Trump. Typically, when you are running with a member of your own party in the White House, their coattails could have an effect on you. It's surprising to see in their polling, John, that Mike Parson is lower than the president in terms of reelect.
Yeah, it's interesting. It's the closest result I've seen. I've looked at a lot of polling data on this race, as you can imagine. There was a poll that Galloway released a week and a half ago that showed Biden actually up by 2 points over Trump in Missouri and Parson up by 7 points over Galloway. And that was the first time I'd seen Parson running appreciably ahead of President Trump in the state. Typically, Parson's been, you know, in between, I would say, 8 and 13 points for the better part of the last 2 months. So I'm a little dismissive of this number, but I'm sure there's going to be other public polls that come out. But one thing that's clear is that this race, this presidential race, is not going to be a 20-point blowout like we saw 4 years ago. I'm quite confident that that's the case here. And I think there's a number of reasons for it. One of them is that simply Joe Biden's not Hillary Clinton. And Hillary Clinton was a very well-defined and unpopular politician, and Donald Trump was kind of an unknown. And based on that, he absolutely ran away with it in this state and many other states. And that's just, I don't think, going to be the case this time. Biden is not as polarizing a figure as Hillary Clinton was. And Donald Trump has, if you just look at the polling data nationally, he's eroded, particularly among suburban women. You made a point the other day that Catholic women have been a real issue for President Trump. And when you see that kind of erosion, that's going to cause your ballot number to come down.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. And look, the races, there's not too many undecided out there as it relates to the presidential election. Those undecideds that do exist are in the far suburbs of every major city in the country. Catholics were a big turnout for Donald Trump, and we're starting to see female Catholics turning away from him. My question to you, John, is when you see numbers like this, because I thought Mike Parson might be polling, my gut told me that he'd be polling a little bit better than President Trump in the state of Missouri. If you believe this poll, it's quite the opposite. Are we starting to see a federalization of gubernatorial races where in the midst of this corona, economic, racial unsettlement that we have going on throughout the state, and throughout the country that it's almost like these races are all kind of a, you know, tied to what happens to the White House.
Yeah, and there's a sense in which every presidential election is a referendum on the president. You know, Missouri is one of the states whose governor's race occurs in the presidential cycle. Most states, like Illinois, their governor's races occur in the off cycle. So they tend to be the ticket leaders in those states, whereas in Missouri, you know, the presidential race follows, and the governor's race follows the presidential campaign. And historically in Missouri, whichever party wins the White House in the state tends to win the governor's race. There have been some exceptions, a few of them. But by and large, over the last 50 years, it really has kind of flowed with if the Democrats win the White House in the state, they win the governor's race and vice versa. And I would expect that more or less to continue here. You know, one of the things about Mike Parson is that he inherited the job as governor. So he was not well known. He didn't campaign for governor. And people
well,
are just now
point,
getting to
Nicole
know him.
Nicole Galloway inherited the job as treasurer.
Right, right.
Because with the death of Tom Steyer, she was appointed by Jay Nixon and immediately became a superstar inside the Democratic Party. So we have two folks who inherited the jobs that they're in right now, not necessarily household names like we're used to here in Missouri, whether it be a Blunt or a Carnahan or an Ashcroft. You know, we've had some legacy families come along. These are two folks that are relatively unknown. I think Nicole Galloway, a local elected official, now a statewide official. And the same thing with Governor Mike Parson, although I think he did a little time in the Senate, didn't he?
Yeah, he was in the State House and State Senate for 16 years combined. So he knows state government. You know, the other interesting thing in this poll is that the undecided in the presidential race, undecided, 2%.
Yeah, how can you be undecided?
Right, and the undecided in the governor's race is 17%, indicating that there's a lot of room to move there. I haven't had the benefit of being able to dig into the crosstabs of these polls, so I can't look at any of the typical metrics that we look at. Talk a little bit about how, you being a political operative, me as well, these polls are a way of life for us. We look at them every day in various races. What kinds of things do you try and glean when you're looking at a poll? I mean, it's admittedly still months before the election, so it's not really a predictor of election day, but it does provide you with some decent information.
Well, we have a little lingo, and we can kind of talk this together, but the fave-unfave, which means the favorable opinion of a candidate, particularly an incumbent, towards their unfavorable. And obviously in the last presidential election, we had both of those candidates that were what we in politics would call upside down. Now, as we look at a more statewide race, we kind of know where the city of St. Louis County, Kansas City, Jackson County, Greene County, Boone County are going to go. They're going to go Democrat. We know where a lot of these counties that John Hancock can name are going to go. They're going to be Republican. So then you start to look at what I call the suburbs and the exurbs vote, John, where women, in particular white women, have been the most malleable back and forth between different campaigns. So that's kind of what I look at when I'm looking at statewide races. How about you?
Yeah, so a couple of things. When you've got two candidates that are reasonably well known, but not universally known. One of the things I look at is I pull those voters who have formed an opinion of both candidates. So I discard everybody in the survey that has no opinion of one or both candidates. Take them out. But they formed an opinion of both candidates, and then I look at the ballot among those voters. And I find that to be much better, much more predictive of election day results than just looking at a poll 5 months before an election. So that's one thing I look at. The other thing that I look at is what I call partisan crossover. So you look at the percentage of, if you're a Republican candidate, look at the percentage of Democrat votes that that candidate's getting on the ballot. And then you look at the percentage of Republican votes that the Democrat is getting on the ballot. If that gap ever gets to be more than 10% one way or the other, which is rare, but it does happen, if that gap gets to be more than 10% one way or the other, then you've got a structural problem for whoever's losing that they're probably not going to be able to recover from. And one of the things about Donald Trump is that he has maintained this 90%-ish support amongst Republicans. There's some indication that that may be diminishing. And if he gets into that trouble zone, that's going to be a real problem for him.
Yeah, there's no doubt about it. President Trump has got a lot of concern coming. John, so many of us are going to go vote one way or the other in November, but we have an election that takes place before that. And in these unique times, a lot of people are casting their ballots ahead of time.
3 weeks from tomorrow, the August primary election, you have to declare whether you want to vote in the Democratic or Republican primary, or you could take a nonpartisan ballot and not vote on any of the offices. But there's some important elections coming up in August. All of the statewide races, all of the state Senate, state House, and right here in St. Louis, St. Louis County executive race is on the ballot. In St. Louis City, there are a number of races on the ballot, circuit attorney, treasurer. There's some important races coming up just around the corner. We're going to visit with the director of elections for St. Louis County, Eric Fay. He joins us after this on KMOX.
Weekday mornings at 8:30, Charlie Brennan and Amy Marks-Kors provide perspective on KMOX and KMOX.com.
And welcome back to Hancock and Kelly. Thanks for sticking around with us. We're going to have a very informative couple more segments with you. Then we're going to take you to Total Information PM. But first now, we go to the TDK Technology Guest Line, where we're joined by Eric Fay, who is the Democratic Director of Elections for the St. Louis County Election Board. Eric, thanks again so much for your time.
Sure. Thanks for having me.
Well, we all know that when it comes to elections in the state of Missouri, the big enchilada is St. Louis County. And so many rules have changed in the midst of our coronavirus. Explain to us exactly how people are able to vote in the August and November primaries as it relates to absentee ballots.
Sure. The biggest change, of course, has to do with absentee. And the state legislature passed some changes to the absentee voting laws at the end of session. Governor Parson signed those into effect just before absentee voting started for the August election. So there are two main things that happened with the new law. First of all, the law added a new excuse for absentee voting, and it has to do with folks who are susceptible to contracting the coronavirus. So if you're over the age of 65, if you're in a retirement home, if you are immunocompromised, and several other subcategories of folks who have vulnerabilities, they are now allowed to vote by absentee ballot, and folks who check that reason do not have to have the ballot envelope notarized. So that's thing one. Thing two is a new mail-in ballot, and that's for any voter in the state of Missouri that wants to vote by mail. They don't need any other reason. They just check that box that they want a mail-in ballot, and they will receive that in the mail. But they do have to have that notarized, and it does have to be sent back through the mail. So those are the two main changes for the August and November elections.
And, Eric, that seems a little onerous to be able to do, but they have made it that you can get it notarized online as well, haven't they?
Well, the remote notarization really does not apply to absentee ballots. That's mostly for documents that can be signed and transmitted electronically, and so far, the advice we've received from Secretary of State's office is that remote notarization won't work for that. So if you have to get your absentee or mail ballot notarized, the Secretary of State's office does have a list of notaries that are willing to notarize those. Of course, people can come to our office or to one of our satellite offices and have the ballot notarized if need be, but they will have to do it in person if they need notarization.
So we all know that the big election that the president and Joe Biden are fighting over is on Tuesday, November the 3rd. But there's a big election in St. Louis County taking place on Tuesday, August the 4th, that includes the county executive's race. Number one, how many absentees have already come in on that race?
That's a great question. We've, to date, I just ran the numbers before I got on the phone here, and we've had over 67,000 absentee ballot applications as of today. So we're rapidly approaching the number we had for the June election, that municipal election in June. That was an all-time record we had in June, so we're on pace here to set a new all-time record for absentee ballot requests in St. Louis County.
And those absentee ballot requests can be made online. They can be made through the mail. But what's the latest date that somebody can request an absentee ballot?
July 22nd is the last day to request a mailed absentee ballot or a mail-in ballot. But what's important for folks to remember, if they missed that deadline for some reason, starting July 23rd in St. Louis County, we'll set up 4 additional satellite absentee voting centers where people can go vote absentee in person, or they can return their absentee ballot in person. And, of course, if they miss all that, then Election Day is the last choice on August 4th.
So you went through the April election, which was held in June because of the coronavirus. You had that record number of absentee ballots. Did that cause any hiccups in terms of ballot counting for St. Louis County?
Well, I was a nice thing, but the election, as you mentioned, was postponed in April, so that gave us the benefit of having a little more preparation time. So even though we were dealing with kind of an unprecedented amount of absentee ballots, we brought in a whole bunch of people to process and count those ballots. So we had 30 bipartisan teams working 5 days straight just to get all those ballots opened, because people should know this isn't some willy-nilly process. The ballots come back. We verify all the signatures on the ballots. Then a Democrat and Republican sit at a table across from each other, and they open every single one of those ballots and make sure everything is copacetic. So the process is secure for absentee voting. And I also want to remind voters that the process on Election Day will also be secure and as safe as we can possibly make it. So we want people to know they can vote by absentee ballot or in person, whatever they feel more comfortable with. We're trying to make both processes efficient and safe in St. Louis County.
We're visiting with Eric Fay. He's the Democratic Director of Elections for St. Louis County. For the August election, if you want to vote for an office, a political office, you have to declare one party or the other. If I go in and ask for a Democratic ballot, say, does that get recorded somewhere? Am I tagged as a Democrat for the rest of my life?
Heaven forbid. That is a really common question we get for every primary election. And the voter's party choice is not recorded. It's not a permanent record anywhere. It's just so the election judges know which ballot to give you. We don't care which ballot you want to take. You just have to tell us one so we know which one to give you.
Well, there you go. And so we are expecting this record number. Oh, the other last question before we let you go. I noticed in June that my polling place had changed. And are we going to go back to the normal polling places in August, or is that all still kind of in flux because of COVID?
So we're not back to the normal complement of polling places yet. We only had 160 polling places in St. Louis County in June. We're back up to 200 for August, but that's still not as many as we would normally have, which is about 360, 370 in St. Louis County. So we will see how August goes. We'll see the state of the virus, and we'll look at the level of absentee ballot requests we have, and then our board will make a decision on how many polling places to have for the November election. But people should take care and notice. We will send a postcard to every voter in St. Louis County telling them what their polling place is for August. So hopefully everybody will check that out. And if they miss it somehow, they can always call us or go to our website and find a polling place there.
Check those postcards, folks. We want to thank Eric Fay. He's the Democratic Director of Elections for St. Louis County. Very informative, Eric. Thanks so much. Hey, when we come back, we're going to get the daily briefing from the St. Louis Metropolitan Pandemic Task Force, headed by Dr. Alexander Garza. That's next after this on KMOX.
News Radio 1120, KMOX, the voice of the Cardinals.
Pam, welcome back to the Hancock and Kelly Show, sitting in for Mark Rudin. We'll take you all the way to the top of the hour, then we'll get you through Total Information PM. I think we'll all agree that this next voice is one we could wish we would hear more often on the radio, and hopefully it's right around the corner. He's one of the voices of the Cardinal. He's none other than Mike Claiborne. Michael, how are you, pal?
You know what? I'm good, but I'd rather hear Mike and John, because I know all would be well with the world.
That's right. And Mike, we're getting closer and closer. First of all, just give us the general sense of what's going on with the ball club. These guys aren't operating in a vacuum. They're excited to get back to baseball, but they're living with Corona as well.
Yes, they are. I mean, much like the rest of the world. And, you know, they're taking the precautions to make sure that they can stay as safe as they can. They're not in the bubble like they are in with the NBA or soon with the NHL, but you know, they're using common sense and, you know, practicing all the things that we've been suggested to do. And so far, so good. But as you know, Michael, everybody's going to, somebody's no matter how secure you think you are, you know, the virus finds you no matter what. And we've seen some players that have been involved with it, and we're going to probably see more. But that's the nature of the beast. But with that said, I've been to a few of the workouts, and, you know, Mike Schilt is very well organized. They're getting their work done. They're going to be ready to go soon. And I like what I've seen so far.
Hey, Mike, are they getting tested on a daily basis?
I don't think it's every day. I think it may be more along the line of every other day, but there's some consistency there. And, you know, they don't do it all on the same day, so you wouldn't get up, you know, 60 results back in one day or anything along that line. But they've got a pretty good system, I guess, that's working so far. But they are certainly monitoring the players and the personnel around them on a regular basis.
These early workouts are a preview of what we're going to see when baseball starts, and that is these huge cavernous ballparks that are empty. What's it feel like, Mike, to watch a bunch of guys and hear that ball popping in an empty 45,000-seat stadium?
You know, I tried to explain it to somebody the other day that it's like watching a high school baseball practice. Because if you had a high school game, at least you have some family and friends or, you know, bystanders standing around watching. But in this situation, it's the players, the coaches, security, media that's high up in the press box, and that's about it. I mean, there's nobody there, and it won't be many more people other than that once we start playing games. It's going to be eerie. They're going to, I believe, pump in some crowd noise. They'll have the walk-up songs for the players. You'll hear their names announced. But other than that, it's going to be pretty quiet. I mean, if you really listen, you may be able to hear it. I don't know if, Michael, if you've ever been to batter's box with a guy who could throw hard when you could hear the ball hissing, you know, the wind cutting through the seams. You may be able to hear that, but you'll certainly hear a lot of things when these games start to get played.
Yeah, it's going to be like going to a Miami Marlins game every day.
Almost. Crazy. You know what? I think, it's a great call, John. It's one of those things where people were asking, well, you know, how's this going to be? And my thing was just ask the Marlins. Hell, they know better than anybody yeah, on how do. This thing works. They do it like, you know, 81 nights a year they for do. The most part.
All right, so
it's going to be different.
Let's get to the ball game now. So we've had a few of these inter-squad games now. So, A, what's your best guess on the starting rotation at this point based on what you've seen?
Man, that's a good question. And I would have said Carlos Martinez, from what I saw on Saturday, was as electric as anybody I've seen so far. But with Jordan Hicks electing to opt out because he's a type 1 diabetic, that means Carlos's role in the bullpen may be more prevalent. Although Ryan Helsley has shown some really good oomph so far, and I thought he had a pretty good spring, he might be in the mix as well. One of the things about this whole situation is the Cardinals are probably a lot deeper in pitching with, you know, young men with major league experience that a lot of teams would have. So Mike Schilt will have some options on who he needs to close games or who he needs to come in early to shorten up games. But Carlos, to me, from what I saw, had the best stuff so far. And there's not a big difference between him and some of the other guys, but his stuff looked unhittable. And I think if you look at the box scores, only a couple of innings, I think he threw like 28 pitches. But, you know, he was kind of playing with guys, and he was playing against some good hitters as well.
Wainwright looked good, from what I understand.
Waino is having the time of his life. He's got the energy and desire of a second-year player. His body has not found out that yet. And is, you know what? And I wouldn't pinch him or tell him anything. He's having the time of his life. And I think what I've seen of him is contagious. It's almost as contagious as the coronavirus itself and just how many other people have followed in his footsteps and tried to, A, take this serious, but, B, have as much fun as you can in a very trying situation.
Yeah, this club's going to be fun to watch. I don't think there's any question about that. You know, you talk about the back end of the bullpen. Of course, Genesis Cabrera's got COVID-19, so we're not seeing him on the hill yet. But a guy that intrigues me is Junior Fernandez. Is there a late-inning role for him maybe on this Cardinal
club? Yeah, there is. Junior got some real big-time experience last year. I mean, he's got a couple of pitches that really will wow some people. And he was a guy that was on the radar quite a bit last year in the minors in Springfield. And I think he's a guy that's certainly going to have a legitimate chance to be a contributor to this ball club. The back end of the bullpen, I'm not really worried about when you have we mentioned Cabrera, we mentioned Helsley, Andrew Miller, the veteran. Tyler Webb was terrific out of the bullpen from the left side last year.
John Gant.
You mentioned Junior Fernandez. John Gant can do everything. John Gant is one of the three best athletes on the team. So if you need John Gant to play third base, he might be able to get something out of him there as well. So, again, I go back to my point about experienced arms, you know, on the pitching staff, be it starters or bullpen. And this is going to be the key to me. I don't know how much they're going to hit. I think I've seen some guys take some better at bats. Paul DeJong, I think, is swinging the bat as well now as he did in spring training. I saw Harrison Bader hit a ball in the right field gap, right center field gap the other day. That's something we haven't seen him do a lot. So his plate discipline is starting to show a little bit. Colton Wong continues to take good at bats. So there's a lot of guys who seem like they've made that next step as far as consistency is concerned that you have to like. So from what we saw last year when we thought run production was going to be a problem, I'm going to go into this season with a little bit more of an open mind because I think a lot of guys have learned and worked on what they needed to work on in the offseason and now the second offseason. So I'm going to go in with an open mind and just say they're going to be better offensively significantly. They may not hit as many home runs, but you know what? There's nothing more fun than to watch a guy hit one in the gap. And with the speed that this team has, we could see some guys really do some running on the bases.
So, Mike, as you know, I'm a golf nut, and I've been watching the PGA Tour. And what's interesting to me is the people who are doing the play-by-play of the PGA Tour, with the exception of one or two, aren't even on site. What's the logistical game going to be for you guys when you're calling the game? Will you be sitting in St. Louis calling it off of a television?
Yeah, it looks like we'll be in St. Louis for most of, if not all, the games. I think here's the key to that. If you're going to watch the games on a monitor, you have to be able to see what the infield situation looks like. Where are they playing a guy with the shift on? Is the outfield playing a guy to pull? Are they bunching them up the middle of the field? And if you're at Wrigley Field, the Cardinals are at Wrigley Field, don't we need to know if the wind's blowing in or blowing out there, considering how much of an impact it has in Chicago? So if you have those things to work from, I think we'll be okay. You know, Ricky and John have done a ton of games, and they know the game. And so I'm comfortable in knowing that they're going to give me the best, as we like to say, description and account of this game without the express written consent of the St. Louis Cardinals Baseball LLC is prohibited. So we'll be fine.
There you go. Well, it's 9 days from today, July the 22nd, right here on KMOX Radio. There's going to be a exhibition game between the St. Louis Cardinals and the Kansas City Chiefs. That will be our first broadcast of
Chiefs
Cardinal
or
baseball.
Royals.
The
one
Royals,
the
yeah, whatever they're called. I can't. They don't have
one any, of them is going to show up for sure.
They don't have any fans either out there for the Royals. So who's calling that game?
John and Mike will probably be on the call. I'll be standing around somewhere, and I know Ricky will be in the ballpark somewhere. So the whole gang will be there, and of course we couldn't get on the air without Jim Jackson. So the merry gang will be together again, and it's been a while since we've been in the same room, so I'm looking forward to that.
Well, brother, we cannot wait. He is the voice of the Cardinals, Mike Claiborne. I'm getting excited about this ball club. I can't wait to see what they do on the field. Can't wait to hear about it right here on the Voice of St. Louis. And those Kansas City Royals will be in town on July the 22nd for an exhibition game before the season kicks off on the 24th. Mike Claiborne, thanks so much for your time, brother.
Now, you sound as excited as if you met your wife. And, Kelly, you don't say anything about excitement. I know your story. So you
That's right. That's right. There. Especially a wife would make me itchy.
Dude's a cool cucumber.
He'd break cool out cucumber. In the hives if we met your wife again.
Hey, when we come back, we've got the cut of the day. We're going to take you down the road to Family Feud. Wait till you hear this. That's coming up next on KOX.
And welcome back to Hancock and Kelly. No worries. We'll have Mark Reardon back here for you tomorrow. But, John, is it time to play the feud?
Yeah, it's time for the
cut of the day.
Playback ready.
Now, the audio cut of the day.
The audio cut of the day is sponsored by the Good Feet Store. Pain relief and comfort to fit any budget. Well, they had NFL players on the Family Feud last night, and this happened.
If Captain Hook was moonlighting as a handyman, he might replace his hook with what tool?
A hammer.
Try again.
A penis.
Tell me the age a kid is too old to sleep with a tent. What the did he say?
It took old Steve Harvey a couple of seconds to get that. That was something else, Hunter, buddy.
That's the first I've heard of that.
Yeah.
Steve Harvey, boy, he's been good for a couple of these types of gaffes, hasn't he?
He's got the greatest reaction. His faces, his reaction. And if you'd have seen that live, brother, it was absolutely hysterical.
Isn't he the one that... Yeah. Announce the wrong person.
That would be he. Yes, it
yeah,
is.
That's great.
Well, that's Michael Kelly. It. I'm John Hancock. Steve Harvey's not here. Hey, we got Total Information PM after this on KMOX.
Hey, what the f*** did he say?
We really need new phones.
T-Mobile will cover the cost of four amazing new iPhone 15s, and each line is only $25 a month.
New iPhone 15s? It's better
over here. Only at T-Mobile, get four iPhone 15s on us and four lines for $25 per line per month with eligible trade-in when you switch.
Minimum of four lines for $25 per line per month with auto pay discount using debit or bank account. $5 more per line without auto pay, plus taxes and fees. Phone fee at 24 monthly bill credits for well qualified customers. Contact us before canceling account to continue bill credits or credit stop and balance on required finance agreement due. $35 per line connection charge applies. See T-Mobile.com.